Yes.
Don't we usually put something in to kind of reserve that November date in case there's a special election? It seems like we've talked about that before. What if, a special session, not a special election?
We put that in all the ones.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, just a clarification, so the small composite picture frame, that's what is sold to members, or, okay. And just for reference, I've seen quite a few images from glossers, and they've all been good quality, and I'll move to accept a little bit of glossers.
Do the people from Glosser, was something in the RFP, you know, to clarify to them kind of the running around that ends up, that needs to be done when they come in? If someone is absent that particular day, we'd hate to leave someone out of the composite that's going to be hanging on the walls for 50 years or something. It's we're the guy from Crosby, you know, he's always pretty good about coming back and making arrangements.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Crispin, yeah, Glosser's been very interested in a bid. I think I've had about 4 phone calls from him before the RFP was done and then after the RFP. So he's, from his questions, he's aware of what work is involved.
Is he local?
Yes, he's from Bismarck.
Make it a little easier than coming down from Crosby if you got to miss some guys that didn't make it. And we always have some that are here, not here for various reasons, so that's a good point, though. Any other discussion? Yes, Representative Vigasov.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jay, has Glosser bid in previous years?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Vigasov, no. Some years have been no bids, other years there have been some bids, and the bids have, we had one year there was a bid from Missouri of $110,000, and that didn't go over too well.
I thought the 11-2 was a little high.
Yeah, sometimes it's surprising. A lot of the bids that have come in have been around the $5,000 range in the past, so Anderson has been very easily the winner, but they are aware of what the bid has been. Photographers when they submit the bids, at least the bid from the previous year. So they know what the awards have been.
I can't imagine why they'd want to do it for that number, but that's just me. I mean, that's a lot of pictures to take and a lot of work to do there. We have a motion to accept a low bid. Is there any other discussion? We'll take a vote.
Representatives Carlson?
Yes.
Drugdahl? Kelder? Kelch?
Yes.
Vigasa?
Yes.
Senators Wardner?
Aye.
Crisman?
Aye.
Kelzer?
Aye.
Schneider?
Aye.
Taylor?
Aye.
Motion passes, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the next item is probably may generate some discussion, and that is the proposal that the Legislative Council staff presents to the Legislative Procedure and Arrangements Committee dealing with Legislative Assembly employee positions and compensation. The memorandum is there. Basically, it's two parts. One is the employee positions. I want to...
get the Spirion thing? Did you do that intentionally?
Oh, yeah. Where did I put Spirion? I got that right here. We need to do the Secretarial Services bid. Again, that was sent down to the...
I was wondering what happened to that.
Well, it's kind of a slam dunk, but the only one who responded was Spirion. And the proposal is for less than what was handed on in the past, mainly because it's for one less, it's for fewer employees. Rather than 6, we cut it down to 5. 3 upstairs, 2 down in the bill and journal room. Their proposal is for $507 a day for those people. The wage rate is exactly what is put into the RFP, $11.50 for the employees, $12 an hour, or $12 for the supervisor. And that's what they suggested last time to assure some type of quality person that would be working there. I think last time it was about $570. Was the cost in the past.
But hasn't our usage gone down as well?
Yes, that's why. But our legislative administrator, Lori Ziegler, watches that pretty closely as to what the amount of work, plus the Spirion, the contractor, also watches that. So if there's work that is reduced, they drop the hours of employees down. And it's basically their recommendation is drop it from 6 to 5. We think we can handle it with five, and then as the legislators are using more email, doing more of the work on their, with their computers, the needs, the correspondence goes down accordingly. Phone message services, you know, telephone services has been going down each session in the past. The messages left because, again, you should be aware of the, I mean, I'm sure you're aware of the use of email and...
Everybody's carrying a cell phone, and, yeah. I mean, it's just changed a lot since we started here.
Quite a bit.
So you need a motion to approve their,
yep.
The secretarial's bid of, for five people at $500 and some a day?
Yes, basically it's their proposal. It'll probably come in less than that because...
So the basic motion would be to hire Sirion with
yes,
their proposal?
Yes, accept their bid.
Yep.
I would move that.
Motion by Senator Wardner, is there a second? By Representative Bigassov. Any other discussion? Now we'll take a vote.
Representative Carlson?
Yes.
Grubdahl, Caldor, Kelch?
Yes.
Bigassa?
Yes.
Senators Wardner?
Aye.
Chrisman?
Aye.
Tilzer?
Aye.
Schneider?
Aye.
Taylor?
Aye.
Motion passes, Mr. Chairman. Now we're back to the Legislative Assembly positions and compensation. Before we go over that, I'd like you to turn to pages 2 and 3 of that memo. It has the table. And we included three sessions. One was 1993 because that's the session where legislative employee numbers peaked. The total number of employees during that session was 136 employees. If you look at that, the main reason it's down to approximately 76 or in last session and 80 employees proposed this time is if you look on the bottom of the page, page 2, you'll start to see page and bill book clerks, chief stenographer and payroll clerk, stenographer, typist, chief bill and journal room clerk, bill room clerk, and then top of the next page, journal room clerk, telephone attendant, chief telephone attendant, telephone page, payroll clerk. Those totaled 61 positions. The only ones that really remain are the page and bill book clerks. Last session there were 7, and that has crept up. There were 6 in 2003, but it's crept up by 1 on it. So basically 54 positions do not exist, primarily because those positions are sourced out through the bid you just approved for 5. Now that's not saying 5 people can handle 54, but with computerization, a lot has changed since 1993 on it. That was the start of legislators receiving computers chamber-wide rather than just the leadership receiving the computers. So I wanted to point that out on it. The next thing is if you look at the table that for 2013, here's what the proposal is. Still 4 staff assistants for the majority leaders and 4 staff assistants for the minority leaders. And the pay resolution authorizes majority leaders to determine how many within that 4 there is, and they can use the pay that's allocated to those 4 for example, the majority last year between the Senate and the House hired 1. So, and you can spread that pay around to the staff assistants and the administrative assistant. Continued Senate employment of the supply room coordinator, that was to allow the assistant sergeant at arms to be available in the Senate because the numbers were substantially reduced. The employment of the parking lot attendant by each House, employment of the number of assistant sergeant at arms at the 2011 level, in addition of a recording clerk position, with the video recording of the floor sessions, there needs to be a person in the chamber, and our proposal is, if you accept that, to locate that person at the front desk, because they'll be running the monitors and running the automatic cameras.
That's a new system we have.
That's a new system.
The cameras up front?
Yep, that's a new system, and if you approve this, I'll assume that that's also approval of a rules amendment to add that recording clerk position to Group B employees, meaning they're hired by the majority party. The whole front desk is hired by the majority party on it. And that's in the rules. The assistant secretary, Senate chief committee clerk, appropriations committee clerks, the committee clerks, the calendar clerk, the bill clerk, those are majority party employees. So this will be added to that on it. We also propose elimination of the payroll clerk position. Back in 1993, there was a payroll clerk for each House. that was moved to part-time with it alternating between the houses. Now that payroll position has to have access to PeopleSoft, which requires a criminal background check, and after the entry of the initial information in December, our legislative administrator said she could handle that just as part of her duties, because it'd take about a day a month, a day or two a month, and it's not worth, we think it's not worth hiring an employee for a day or two a month when the legislative council can absorb that position. And then elimination of one kiosk information attendant position. There are two information kiosk attendants, one hired by each house. We propose going back to the way it was about 2001 and 2003, when that position alternated between the houses on it, and that would leave a spot available down there, and we propose locating the tour guide down at the information kiosk on it, so that the tours could, and the information can be handled.
The information kiosk up in the main hall?
Yes.
That means all those kids are going to show up there?
That's where the information tour guide could be handled.
Would those kids be up in that main hallway?
He meets...
When they bring in a busload of kids?
Right now he meets the bus down here, and he can still meet the bus down here. But where some of the conflict has been in the past is... And information kiosk attendant has been scheduling her own tours on it without coordination on it. So that's where we propose moving it down and at least locating the tour guide there, so that there's a sharing of information as to what kind of tours are happening.
I'm just wondering if it causes any kind of a backlog of people when we get two busloads of kids around the kiosk and we're moving in and out of the chambers.
I think the tour guide could handle the people not meeting up at the desk.
But if they did, it would be, I think, you know how congested it gets. If we have, a lot of times there's receptions and things and displays in the hallway. If we got those kids up there at the kiosk.
I guess the other thing is they're down here now during committee meetings. So there's people in the halls here going to committee meetings when the kids are here.
Most of us just show up here and everybody's hired, but this is quite a job to try and get people who only work for a few months. And we usually have somebody like Representative Martinson's going to help this year to help us get people hired. And any comments, Bob? I mean, you're the guys get stuck working with these people and telling them what they're going to do. So I, because this is a quite a deal to try and fill that staff out, so everybody shows up and all of a sudden everybody's got a clerk. And everybody and all these people are on the floor, and their sergeant arms are ready. I just assume they're all going to be here. But Bob has been, because we really need a Bismarck person to help us with this, because that's where most of them are coming from.
Well,
comments, Bob?
Mr. Chairman, I do have some comments. I'm Bob Martinson from District 35. So I'll just make my comments on the, I got this yesterday from Jim Smith, and I did read it. Back in the old days when we had quite a few employees, I think I was chairman of the employment committee for about five or six sessions, and it was easier then because we had more people that were looking for jobs and stuff, and now the finding committee clerks is probably one of the most difficult tasks. But as I read this, I did have a comment on the information desk, and I've observed because of my background with the employment committee, kind of watched it over the years, and we've really cut back a lot, and I think maybe a tad too much. But I don't think it worked very well when we only had one information clerk, and I don't think that it's a good idea to have the tour guide there, because when those busloads of kids come, that's quite a bit of congestion, and I think you need two people there. When we only had one person, if that person needed a break or something, they had to go and find somebody to step in for them. And if there's a problem, and I heard there were some concerns in the past about the information desk scheduling tours or maybe being involved in some things that they shouldn't have been involved in, well, I view that as a management problem. And that should be handled by our chief clerk or the Senate chief clerk or the employment committee. That those conflicts shouldn't happen. They should have clearly defined jobs and, you know, do what they're asked to do and nothing more or nothing less. So that's one comment there. I have thought, would you like me to continue just, I'll make these comments now and then?
Make them all, then we've got to deal with this because we need to start getting the ball rolling here.
Then I do think you might need an additional page or two. You have four there. At times, that's not a whole lot. Maybe, I know we've talked about these things in the past about part-time with using the University of Mary or Bismarck State, when the kids only go to school kind of a half a day, but at one time, that really wasn't going to work because of the, we didn't have all the computers and stuff. So I think that maybe another page or two. Then the way that we have things in the House with our split, and because of the Democrats' minority, they don't even have a sergeant at arms. And I think that at the very least, we ought to add a sergeant at arms for the Democrats. Now, most of the time, things aren't of a political nature, and most people don't even know or care who hired which person. But there are times when a legislator wants to deal with a member of their own party if things are confidential. And the Democrats don't have a lot of hires in the House, and I think they have one, I think one page is all. And I think they ought to have a sergeant at arms. So I think you ought to add a sergeant at arms there. Then I think that the recorder, it says in here that they do other duties. I think that we should just make pretty clear what that recorder does during the downtime so that everybody's not telling that person what to do or where to go or whatever. You know how that can be when you have too many bosses, just like you guys at the Legislative Council. 150-some bosses is way too many. So those are my comments.
Okay. Any thoughts on that, Jay? Any comments?
Mr. Chairman, this committee always makes the recommendations. It's been up to the employment committees because, like I said, it has been kind of creeping up based on what the recommendations are as opposed to what's
you are hired. Can we give them any flexibility here on a couple of these spots? If we don't fill them, we don't fill them, but we have the opportunity if we can.
No.
I mean, I understand, and I share his concern about the tour guide being out of the kiosk. I really think that could be a problem there.
Mr. Chairman, like I said, this committee is making the recommendation.
Yeah.
It's not locked in stone. So if the recommendation, if you want to increase it, you can increase it as part of your recommendation now. But it's still a decision of the employment committee how many employees to hire.
Yep.
I caution the numbers, and I'll say it, and it's, if people walk into the chambers and they see a lot of employees sitting around, that's a bad impression. I mean, that's...
They see a lot of legislators sitting around.
Legislators are at desks, you know. I'm just saying, if you walk into the door during a legislative session, you're met by the employees.
Yes,
and it's kind of like you pass the crowd on it. So, and I just remember I was at a service club meeting many years ago on it, and an employee who worked in the legislative session said it was great being a state employee during the legislative session because they didn't have to do anything.
And, well, that was really good.
And that's just something to be aware of.
So I guess if we're asking for a little bit of flexibility on the numbers, what's our responsibility here? I'm a little confused. Do we just pass this on to full legislative management?
You can, Mr. Chairman.
Or do we pass it on to the employment committee, which is?
Mr. Chairman, or you can make the motion to increase it as recommended, you know, for the House employees as recommended by Representative Martinson, which would be two additional pages and an additional assistant sergeant at arms. And both information kiosk attendants.
Any comments, thoughts on that committee?
Are you talking about a page, Mr. Chairman, for each chambers? Is that, or do you need two over in the House?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Warder, my recommendation was only based on the House, and it could be one or two pages. I think just to have a little flexibility, if you recommended two and we only did one more. But the problem, and I understand what you're saying about people sitting around because I'm there all the time too. The problem is when you need somebody, you need them. And because of the pace of the session, if you need them right now, you don't need them tomorrow. You need them right now. And I think we've all been in a position where you need some help. And if it's not available, it's a little frustrating. But I understand your thought. We could maybe, you know, fight.
That's, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that's how the assistant sergeant at arms crept. The House added a halftime for two sessions, and that was converted to a full-time. We just included that because we kept on adding a halftime. I think there's still a halftime position on one of these positions.
But there could be some pages that are part-time from the campuses. I kind of like that idea, to get them a little exposed to what we're doing here. That you could hire them if they were, if they knew they were half-time and they were, we're obviously in session at very particular times, and they surely wouldn't need to be sitting here in the morning.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, I know you don't want to get down into the, all of the details on this stuff, but the history of some of that part-time stuff is, we had an employee or two from time to time that wasn't working out real well. So we suggested that maybe a half a day would work better, and so then that became a half-time employee. And then when that employee didn't apply the next session, we thought, well, you know, we really do need that person, so let's, so there are variables here that, that most of you don't get bogged down in that. So anyway, that's what I'm suggesting, that you put two at the information desk, one to two additional pages, and a sergeant at arms for the Democrat Party.
Senator Warner.
Senator Taylor, any comments, or even Senator Dever, but I think in the Senate, we're fine.
Yeah, I agree, Senator Wardner. It seems like the workflow is managed in the Senate. I'd let the House members speak for their side. I do like the idea of maybe setting it up, and it maybe be our recommendation to Employment Committee that we look at something that's maybe targeted, since we have two universities right here in this area, to involve young people. If there's a way to, just like our intern program with the law school.
Senator Dever, you have a comment?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dick Dever, a senator from District 32, and I've served as employment chairman for, I think, about four or five sessions now. I don't have anything really to add to that conversation except a couple of things. I like the idea of college students, in part because the unemployment rate around here is pretty favorable, and hiring employees might be a little bit more of a challenge this time. Another factor that we might be considering, both for employees and for legislators, is housing might be a little bit difficult this session too. So if you could just take some of those into consideration. But I think the important thing for us in the Senate is the flexibility to do what we need to do to serve the needs of the Senate.
Well, I'm trying to figure out what kind of a motion we're going to get here.
Mr. Chairman, I guess one concern is hiring college students when we get towards the crossover and towards the end of the session. We're in on the floor, you know, off and on all day for a week or so. And sometimes those college students probably can't show up at all those times. And that's when, if there is a frenzy, that's when it's going to be of needing people. That would be my only concern about hiring college students, is that they're going to be able to be there when maybe they're really needed the most. And one other comment, I would hope that if we make a recommendation that, you know, the minority get another person, that the Employment Committee then doesn't have the flexibility to say, no, you're not going to have that. I mean, either we do or we don't. I mean, I wouldn't want the Employment Committee to say, no, you don't need that person. And if we say, yeah, we do, and the Employment Committee, who of course is controlled by the majority, say, no, you don't. If we make the recommendation, I want to be able to say we can hire that person, not give them that flexibility at least. And not that I'm criticizing anyone, but just, I don't want that to happen. Thank you.
Well, I think if we authorize them, we'll make every attempt to fill them. That would be my understanding as we go through this. You know, and we have, when you look at the numbers, we've gone down, and I'm not as concerned about inside the chamber, because that hasn't been a concern for me. But I'm more concerned about the kiosk and the tour things, and that's handled properly, because we get some of these big bus tours. I'm just wondering what's going to happen with one person at the kiosk and it up there. You better have them locked at the door. So,
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
May I suggest, Mr. Chairman? Oh, go ahead.
Senator.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, I had a question and then maybe a suggestion. Is it possible, if we are to go to one person at the kiosk rather than two, that the secretarial service can be a fill-in there
Mr. Chairman.
Or breaks and that sort of thing.
Senator Christman, we attend, this committee, we proposed a couple of interims ago that the telephone room, you know, the information kiosk, to give them something to do, they could be on the, in the cycle for phone messages coming in. And that lasted one day. They, at that time, the attendant said they don't want to answer the phone during the day. Using a secretarial service to come down, there might be some conflict on that.
Okay. Well, then, Mr. Chairman, I don't know.
We contract one and we hire the other one.
Yeah.
So that's a different game there in itself.
Well, then, Mr. Chairman, I really think we should leave the tour guide business down here rather than at the kiosk. If there's a way to leave a little flexibility for the employment committee to work with a few college students and maybe peak some of the days with them, I'm certainly fine with that. And other than that, I think we should stick with this recommendation.
So what happened at the kiosk?
As it is now.
Two people or one?
Two, as it is now, it'd be two.
Yeah, and I guess I'm fine either way, but at this point I'll say two, just to get it started.
One quick comment, speaking for those of us that don't have any staff. Now, you all have people that somebody can go to your offices and say, where is so-and-so? So most of us, the information desk, that's where we walk by there, and the information people know us, and they're able to say, so-and-so is looking for you or whatever. So you really, to have somebody just come down there for a short period of time when they don't know, you know, they need to provide information. It's called an information desk, and then you're just going to get, well, you know, I don't know. You know, the other person will be back. So that's my last pitch for two people there.
I had that experience in a Denver airport. I don't know where that place is at. I don't work here.
So, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
So my motion, if Jay can make one out of this, would be keeping it at two.
Keeping it at two, the tour guide downstairs and the opportunity to add an assistant sergeant at arms and one person.
That one I didn't.
Would the motion be that there be two information desk attendants?
Yep.
An additional house assistant sergeant at arms?
Yep.
And okay. An additional house page.
Oh.
And an additional house page. I mean, assistant sergeant at arms and an additional page.
Then someone else would have to make that motion.
You didn't add the assistant sergeant at arms.
Right. Mr. Chairman, to me, that kind of addition is sort of what the pages do. It seems to me the assistant sergeant at arms is work for the sergeant at arms. And somebody has to be in charge, and it can only be one, I think.
Well, right now, what do we have for assistant? We have one assistant and one regular sergeant at arms, or one head guy?
Mr. Chairman, it's not.
You have four and a half in the house.
It would be.
And you have two in the Senate.
Yeah, it would not be. We have a sergeant at arms, a deputy, and an assistant. It's just an assistant.
Okay. You have four and a half assistants right now, so it'd be increasing it by one.
Well, I don't have any trouble with that.
Okay. So it's you add one assistant sergeant at arms in the house, one page in the house, and have and retain two information kiosk attendants.
Yep.
Okay.
That's the way I would see what was been discussed here. Anybody understand where we're at here? Any other discussion? Senator Dever?
Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to figure out how the reporting works, because in the Senate last time, I think we had one position that was part-time sergeant at arms and part-time camera operator. And I'm not sure how that fits in with this proposal.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dever, there's no camera operator anymore.
But then that position just goes away?
Well, that's your sergeant at arms, it becomes a regular assistant sergeant at arms. It's up to you to hire. I mean, Mr. Chairman, it's Senator Dever, it's up to the employment committee to determine how many assistant sergeant at arms you need. This is the recommendation, you have this many.
Yeah.
and half the responsibilities of that assistant sergeant-at-arms to run the cameras during the session, that's not going to exist. The cameras are going to be automatic, subject to fine-tuning by the recording clerk who's located up at the front desk.
Because those new cameras now are on the front, up by the voting boards, right? Isn't that where they're at?
Yeah.
I understand that, the recording clerk is not necessarily tied to the front desk. We have flexibility.
Well, it's up to the employment committees to decide what you want to do with the positions, because the job description hasn't been written. The recording clerk is located at the front desk. Subject to either the Secretary of the Senate or the Employment Committee saying, help somebody else.
So this is our recommendation to the Employment Committee, and they have some flexibility to fill as they need to?
Yes.
Okay. Just so I understand now, it all. Senator Snyder.
To take a clarity, does this recommendation include Representative Martin's recommendation that the House get an additional, was it Sergeant-at-Arms?
Yes.
Okay, and this motion includes that?
Yes. Well, the motion I'm suggesting.
Did we have someone make that motion?
He didn't make it.
It's probably better coming from the House. See, these guys, they don't realize what it's like with twice as many of us running around in circles in there. I understand that, Senator. We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. We have any other discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I'm assuming that included the possibility of one additional sergeant-at-arms, one additional page. That was the recommendation?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And round of your discussion, we'll take a vote.
Representative Carlson?
Yes.
Drubdahl, Kaldor, Kelsch?
Yes.
Vigasa?
Yes.
Senators Wardner?
Aye.
Chrisman?
No.
Kilzer?
Aye.
Schneider?
Aye.
Taylor?
Aye.
Motion passes, Mr. Chairman. Second part of this memo probably could have included it in the motion, but maybe not, because this is the compensation levels. And that is on the last page.
Is it the long spreadsheet one?
It's
or?
The four, no. Five. No, that's too complicated for me. Keep on backing up. There, this one.
It's on page 5 of that same thing we're looking at.
The session employee compensation, basically the last few sessions, the rates have been generally increased by what the Legislative Assembly has authorized across the board, has authorized for state employees. So what was done here, if you look at the on page 5, that's the 2011 daily salary. That's what the daily salary was that the legislative employees were paid. Does not include the dollar a day bonus for prior legislative sessions, which can go up to 10 legislative sessions. So some of these will be getting $10 more. The 2013 proposed daily salary is the 2011 daily salary adjusted by 3% and 3% to reflect what was authorized by the Legislative Assembly for state employees in 2011 and 2012. So you'll see the proposed salary schedule right there, and the number of positions, which will be changed accordingly when we do this. And this committee has normally made a recommendation for that. But what happens is we prepare the concurrent resolution for the pay. Again, it's subject to the employment committees introducing that during the regular session. But this would be a recommendation of this committee as to what the pay structure is for session employees.
Questions, discussion? If not, a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we vote this.
A motion from Senator Wardner. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a second from Senator Snyder. Any other discussion? If not, we'll take a vote.
Representatives Carlson?
Yes.
Drubdahl, Kaldor, Kelsch?
Yes.
Vigasa?
Yes.
Senators Wardner?
Aye.
Chrisman?
Aye.
Kilzer?
Aye.
Schneider? Taylor.
Aye.
Motion passes, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman?
Yes, Representative Kelch.
I need some clarification on when an employee gets some room, or, you know, if they come in, like, for the organizational session, and they're from out of town, do they get a room compensated for during that time? They don't, at any time?
Chairman, Representative Kelch, no. They would get compensated if they come in for the training. They're from out of town, they come in for training during December, but during a regular session, there's no provision for reimbursing expenses of employees.
Thank you.
All right. Where are we at here? Are we up to Mr. Knutson?
Yes, we are.
Mr. Knutson, information relating to legislative compensation. If you remember, during the last session, we eliminated the Legislative Compensation Commission, or committee, whatever we called them. And because of that, Mr. Knutson's going to kind of explain to us where that process is at.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Alan Knutson with the Legislative Council staff. And yes, as Representative Carlson said, during the last session, the Legislative Compensation Commission was repealed, and that commission in the past had always made recommendation as far as adjustments to legislative pay, and introduced a bill during the session to support their recommendation. The change that's been made there now is legislative management is responsible for making a recommendation for introduction to the session, and this committee has been assigned the responsibility to provide input on what and how that process should begin. So I think you have a few memos related to legislative compensation in your binder. I'm not going to go through all of them. I'm just primarily the first one called the Legislative Compensation Adjustment Process. If you look on the left-hand column, about halfway down, the current compensation levels, I'll just briefly go through those. Currently, monthly pay is at $440. The leaders get additional monthly pay of $316. The daily session pay is currently $157. Interim pay is $157. Lodging expense, the projection, what it will be for this next session is $1,351 per month for lodging during the session. And there's a formula set in statute that rate is calculated at 90% of the GSA rate, and then that amount is taken times 30 times 65%, and that's how you come up with the $1,351 a month. So right now the GSA rate is $77 per night, 90% of that is $69.30. You take that times 30 and then times 65%, and that's how you come up with the $1,351 a month. The interim lodging expense is, again, 90% of the GSA rate, so currently $69.30 per night plus tax. Mileage is based on the federal rate, and that right now is 55.5 cents a mile. Interim meals, that was changed last session. That now is up to $30 per day. And then the additional daily compensation for leaders and committee chairmen was also adjusted last session by about $5 a day for each of those. Before I actually get into to what we're proposing as far as the change, if you turn to the next memo, this one should be titled Legislative Compensation Increases Compared to Inflation and State Employee Salary Increases. Just want to touch on a couple things in this memo. On the first page, you can see, kind of going back to 1981, what the compensation has been. And if you notice, starting in 2007, that's when the legislature started tying legislative pay to the same percentage increase as state employees. In the 2007-09 biennium was a 4% annual increase, 2009-11 was a 5% increase, and then this current biennium, it's been a 3% annual increase. If you turn the page, there's a large chart on the appendix to that, and this shows, going back to 1981, what the actual compensation rates have been for legislators, both for daily pay and monthly compensation. And then in the middle section, it compares that to what the increase would have been based on the inflation rate. So if you can see now, the daily rate now is at 157, monthly pay at 440. If you compare that to inflation, the interim pay would be at $156, the daily session pay would be at $225, and the monthly compensation would be at $449. And then on the far right section, that compares those 81 rates to what they would be now if there would have been the same percentage increase as what state employees got. And there you can see the daily compensation would be at $156 during the interim, the session compensation would be at $225, and the monthly compensation at $450. So that's just some information as far as background. There's two other memos that are also included, and I won't go into those. The next one called Legislative Compensation and Expenses really just kind of tells you a lot about the history of legislative compensation adjustments and what the changes have been each session. And then the last one compares legislative compensation in North Dakota to other states. There's a number of tables that are attached that show what other states are doing for legislative compensation. And again, you can look at in that in whatever detail you'd like. So going back to the first memo, this is what the staff is proposing is what we should include in the budget going forward here, and this would be the starting point for discussions of legislative pay during the session. And then I guess once I go through this, we're looking for input from you as far as if any additions or changes or other items that you'd like to address. So what we're proposing is to include funding in the budget to provide for a 3 and a 3 annual change for legislative compensation. That would be for the daily session pay, the monthly pay, and the interim pay. We need to include this in our budget request, which gets submitted to OMB in November, and then what we would plan to do would be to include the statutory changes associated with it, with this, in the legislative branch appropriation bill that gets introduced. And again, this would be the starting point for discussions during the session. And then as you're working with state employee pay or whatever, then you can make further adjustments during the session. So again, a 3% annual increase. And at the bottom of the page, there's a chart that shows, first for monthly pay, like I mentioned before, the current rate is $440. So July 1, 2013, that would increase to $453. And then in 2014 to $467. The estimated additional cost of that would be about $73,000. Then the daily session pay would increase from $157 to $162 to $167 at a cost of $176,000. The interim pay would increase by the same amounts, and the cost of that is estimated at about $37,000.
Where is that chart, Al? I'm having...
Oh, sorry. At the bottom of that very first page on the legislative compensation adjustment process.
Oh, there it is. Okay.
Yep. Everybody find that? And the first memo that I was going through.
Back one to find it. Whenever I could tell we were not with you.
Okay, sorry. Okay, everybody.
Yeah, you can go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, so then the interim pay cost is about $37,000, and then the leader's additional pay per month would go from $316 to $325 to $335 in 2014, and that's about $1,400. So the total cost of this that we would plan to include in the budget request would be about $288,000. So Mr. Chairman, that's kind of what the plan is for what the staff would do as far as the budget request and the bill that's introduced. You know, certainly open any input. Again, this doesn't change any expense reimbursement amounts other than the monthly lodging. Any other expense adjustments would also affect all state employees.
Now, the lodging, I believe, Al, is adjusted once a year by the federal government, and we're tied to 90% of that rate, I think.
Right. Mr. Chairman, it changes each October.
And how about our mileage? Is the same thing apply to that we're tied to a percentage of that mileage that's adjusted once a year?
That can change quarterly.
Oh, quarterly? Okay. But we took care of those two things as kind of automatics.
Right.
And I don't believe that we need a motion of any kind on this. We just need to, they need to be able to plug a number in to their budget recommendation that they have to submit. Mm-hmm. So with the format we're following that it's recommended is just to follow what the standard raises have been, that we've followed that procedure for the last couple bienniums. So obviously when it gets to the session, we'll decide what those final numbers will be. But this is the rationale for why we did it and the explanation. Any questions or discussion for Mr. Knutson? Representative Vigasau.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Alan, you mentioned that lodging rates are adjusted in October, so next month, will we get an adjustment? How does that work with what we're proposing for the next biennium, then?
Right, Mr. Chairman, the GSA rate can change on October 1st. However, the statute that applies to lodging reimbursement during the session, OMB sets that based on what the GSA rate is in August prior to the session. So that's already been determined.
That's the $13.51?
That's the $13.51, yeah. The daily lodging may change, the $69.30, so what you would get reimbursed during your organizational session may change, but the session monthly pay is set.
This would be amazing how every place we look will be $13.51. It might be $13.50 for a couple guys to give us a break, but it's amazing. Any other questions, comments about his recommendation, Representative Kelch?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just wondered, has there ever been any studying done, like these rural legislative districts have gotten pretty tremendous. We get invited to city council meetings and all this and that, and they're not invited, asked to be there. And, you know, you can go through that $440 very quickly on a couple, three nights of that. And that happens quite frequently, to be honest with you. Is there any study been done on helping the rural districts in those cases? Because, you know, a lot of them are 100 to 120, 30 miles across, and the travel expense gets pretty burdensome at times. Anybody ever done any study on trying to reconcile that?
Mr. Chairman, I don't recall anything other than, you know, through the Legislative Compensation Commission process as far as their discussions, but I don't know of any in-depth study comparing different legislative districts and what the potential cost might be.
Any other discussion? If not, Al, that's what we're assuming will go forward as you submit your budget proposal.
Right, thank you.
We'll get a good chance to look at it during the session. Next up, Mr. Steckler. And I think we're going to talk about data plans, which I can't imagine would be at all confusing in today's market.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Jason Steckler, Legislative Council. I'm going to try to go through this really quickly. Jay said I only have 5 minutes, and I think we actually have something bet on this. So I'm going to go quickly, and then we'll have some time for questions afterwards. Currently, legislators are reimbursed.
Is there information in here?
No, sir.
All right. Okay.
This is I'll just try to talk and explain the current process and what we're going to propose and some of the issues that we've kind of been experiencing. So, as you know, legislators are basically reimbursed for data expenses on their mobile devices two ways. The first one is a non-Verizon user. They either submit a monthly or a quarterly voucher, copies of their bill. We try to discern what their data costs are, and we do actual expense reimbursement. Another way to do it is a Verizon user. We have split billing set up with that vendor, which means that the data portion of your bill is sent directly to the state of North Dakota. The legislator or the member does not see it, and we actually do reimbursement directly to Verizon. Both situations, in order for us to do actual reimbursement, require the legislator's telephone number to be the main one on the contract, and the actual data plan must be tied to that particular device. That's given us some problems. The mobile data plan reimbursement and split billing are causing issues for legislators because they are not able to take advantage of the new data plans, i.e. the shared mobile data plans available out there for legislators, their multiple devices, family members, and that type of deal. Split billing is not available when you go to these new shared data plans. That has caused an issue because legislators aren't able to seek the best rate available. And they've also experienced some customer service issues. Those legislators that are on split billing can go to a storefront, they can look at phones, but the storefront cannot help them extend a contract, change some of the terms, change their data plans, or even purchase a new phone until they contact us, we contact the government rep, we actually remove the split billing, then the storefront can actually allow the legislator to upgrade, change a plan, do whatever else, and then we try to get them back on the split billing. So obviously we've had legislators that have experienced great amount of frustration because they've been in the storefront. They thought they could upgrade. The storefronts know nothing of the government data plans. They get up to the counter to actually do the upgrade or the change, and then they find out the computer system doesn't allow them to do it because the actual data is actually tied to a government contract and builds directly to the state of North Dakota. So what we're proposing is effective November 1, 2012, all participating legislators will submit a request form for their mobile data costs to the Legislative Council. It'll identify the data costs associated with their legislative business along with a copy of their wireless carrier bill identifying the mobile data costs. This request and bill will be kept by the Legislative Council, and monthly reimbursements will proceed from that time until the legislator incurs a change. Their contract goes up, they change a vendor, data plans get cheaper, more expensive. At that point, they do the same thing. Another request form, a copy of their bill, we put it on file, and actual monthly reimbursement would continue at that point. The policy then continues the practice of data reimbursement only. The policy does not include the purchasing of mobile hardware, voice or text plans, carrier and device access costs. All we've been doing is reimbursing the data only. So what the policy allows is the greatest flexibility for legislators out there. It allows participation in most cost-effective data plans, which you're really not able to do right now, and allows legislators to use storefront locations, hopefully giving them some flexibility and allowing them to actually deal with their carrier themselves rather than having to call up here. We get rid of or have the government person remove the government tag on the account, then they can upgrade their phones. So with that, Mr. Chairman, that would be the proposal.
And how would this be reimbursed? Would it be just on the monthly check that the legislator gets?
The actual reimbursement would actually come from Lori. Would that be on their monthly payroll, or would that be a separate check?
There would be a separate check, just like your expense.
And we figure that would be an easier process than the way we're trying to do it now, to cut that check?
There's a lot of, just to real quickly do this, and I think, Jay, I've met the 5 minutes, but how it actually works is, for an example, right now, Representative Carlson, your data plan, the plan that you picked is tied only to your telephone number. That may not be the best for your situation because you obviously have other devices probably on your account. The share plans, what you do is you say, okay, I have two smartphones. The access for that is $40 a month. Now I look at my data. Between the two phones that you have, you'd be able to pick 4 gig at a certain amount. Both phones share that, and that would actually decrease your wireless carrier bill. Both AT&T, who just came out with their share plans, and I'm not as familiar, as well as Verizon, are really pushing their share plans, even to the point that those people that, like myself right now, I don't have a share plan, but if I go to upgrade and get the next new greatest phone, they're going to push me very heavily into the share plan. Otherwise, they may tell me I have to pay full retail price for the phone. They want everybody onto their share plans. Their share plans, they know that they don't make a tremendous amount of money, and nor do they congest their networks with text and voice. It's everybody using the data network off the side of their tower, so that's what they want to actually say, hey, take a pool of data, all your devices share it, and that's what most legislators are calling us about now. The problem with that is if you have two devices on there, one of them is for legislative business, and let's say your data costs $60 a month, the legislator then will request, hey, I have two devices on there, they're used equally, I use 50% of it, so I request reimbursement of $30 a month, because we have no way to discern that anymore. Gives the greatest flexibility to legislators, especially if they have multiple devices used for legislative business.
Well, I know that it has created confusion when you go in and try and get, we've had more than one opportunity to get our bill screwed up because they don't want to deal with they can't figure out how they're going to just pull the data part of the bill off. So then if you want to switch your phone, it's really exciting. So I do understand the confusion that goes with it. Obviously, there's a little bit of trust and faith here because everybody's going to have, that's married, is going to have one or two or three people on their phone. And the amount of data may be, I hardly ever text and my wife does. You know, so there's going to be some things that are different on there, but I guess we have, it'd be the trust factor with those as to what share of it was going to be used by the legislator on the data.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Senator Snyder's a kind of a techie kind of guy, and we'll let him comment on this.
I think that's about the only way you could do it. I was looking at I think it's a Verizon All Everything plan, and getting my wife's iPhone on there, getting my iPhone on there when it comes in. And outside of just trusting legislators to do the right thing and put in the reimbursement, I'm not sure how.
You know, and I personally don't have any trouble with doing it that way, but it would probably simplify things a lot when you go in to deal with upgrades, and obviously they do push the sharing thing really big. You almost hate to go in and change phones because you know it's going to be a hassle to try and get everything switched over.
This would take, you know, the government account rep out of the equation, the legislator owns their bill. You still get your state employee discounts on your data package as you do now if you're not with Verizon, but it's kind of a win-win.
Accept the policy as proposed.
Yes, Senator Christman?
Mr. Chairman, three questions. When the expense reimbursement comes out, Lori said it would be separate from your compensation, but will it be in the same check as your other expense reimbursement, or will it be a whole separate one? But
she's gone.
It's not so. That's probably not so important anyway.
Question, though, because that's kind of what I was asking in the wrong way.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Christman, I just checked with Alan. We believe it would be separate because it's going to be something that Lori's going to put into the system monthly, and it's going to keep reoccurring until the legislator either does another request and brings in a copy of a bill to depict the change either up or down.
Okay. And secondly, Mr. Chairman, the vouchers that we turn in, do we send that in every month, or do we send in a copy and then legislative council knows what it is, and that's the reimbursement until we have a change in our plans?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Christman, the second thing, what you said, one time you bring a copy of the request in, which we will provide to every legislator, so there's some continuity there. You bring in a copy of your bill, you say, I request this much. We initiate the actual reimbursement process every month until you tell us it changes.
And lastly, Mr. Chairman, you know, we don't reimburse our mileage separate if you drive a four-wheel drive pickup as opposed to a small economy car. We just get paid a mileage rate. And is this going to get so complex that all of a sudden some legislator's in trouble because they changed their plan? It's a shared plan. Maybe their spouse or something changed it, and then it was a month late till they got a change, and the meanwhile you got reimbursed too much, and it might be pennies, but technically you took advantage of something. And so my point is this complex to the point that we should just change it and set an amount? And if they're on a data plan, that's how much you get reimbursed. And if you have one that's more, you lose a little, just like having a four-wheel drive pickup. If you have one that's less, you make a little, and it just balances out.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Christman, all great points, kind of talking about an IT stipend, but I would defer that to Jim and to Jay to actually talk about what Century Code allows in actual reimbursable expenses versus something that now becomes part of your pay.
It's income versus expense.
Yeah, that's an interesting point.
It's income versus expense.
It would become an income at that point in time, would it not?
Mr. Chairman, and that's what we're trying to avoid. With a stipend, you basically have an income situation rather than a reimbursement of your costs. And that's what we're trying to do with this is, you know, have a voucher reimbursement system so you don't have taxable income and all that.
Could you phrase it in a way where you would reimburse up to $50 in data expenses? Would that change anything at all in terms of whether this is income or reimbursement?
Well, Mr. Chairman, on the stipend part, I think that'd still be income even if you had a cap on it. Because basically you're not reimbursing somebody for costs they've incurred. You know, on their tax return, they could perhaps deduct their costs, but it gets a little complicated.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we just thought of this as the easiest on legislators to do. Determine how much your data plan is your legislative work. Send us the statement along with a statement showing that you're at least paying that much, and it's on file.
Well, I don't know about the rest of you, but I get an awful lot of calls every day and every week that deal with legislative business. And whether it be in a text or whether it be an email that I get on my droid or whatever it is, whatever I'm being reimbursed for that data should be reimbursed because I couldn't function with what I'm doing without it. Now, obviously, there's a little bit of a trust factor, but I don't think we want to create a tax situation for anybody either. So, and I'm not sure if you do, because you get mileage if you keep track of those expenses, and you give those to your accountants, you're not going to be, that's not going to be viewed as income to you when you're reimbursed for your mileage. But if, I suppose they got technical, they'd tell you exactly how many miles and what you spent. But, so I don't have any trouble with that proposal to try it and see how it works, and I think we need to review it in 6 months or whatever when we meet, and say, you know, is this working or is it crazy? You know, is that, if everybody submits it, there's 143 of us, however many there are, that have to submit those. And you submit it one time, and I think we should have a review along the line and see if it's working. And if it's not working, we can get more technical as about how it would be with a standard figure. Senator Christman? Well, I thought you had a question. We need a motion to accept the proposal as presented by Mr. Steckler. And we got a motion?
I would move that.
Senator Wardner moves. Is there a second?
Give her a shot. I'll second.
We have a second. Senator Kilzer? We'll take a vote.
Representatives Carlson?
Yes.
Drubdoll? Caldor? Kelch?
Yes.
Vigasa?
Yes.
Senators Wardner?
Aye.
Christman?
Aye.
Kilzer?
Aye.
Schneider?
Aye.
Taylor?
Aye.
Motion carried, Mr. Chairman.
All I know is the last time I tried to change my phone and plan, it was just I didn't have service. There wasn't anybody that wanted to deal with it. They said, nobody has this government plan. I said, yes, we do. We've had it for years. Well, we can't find it in the records. So it's not, it's always been a confusion. So if we can make it simpler for everybody, I'm all for it. Thank you, Mr. Steckler. Mr. Berngrun?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we're right on schedule.
Look at that.
And I'd like the committee to look at some proposed rules amendments and get through as many as we can today.
We skip these off about as long as we can. It's about time we have to deal with them.
Maybe the committee needs to deal with them before its last meeting in November on it. But skip the table on House and Senate rules differences. That just points out the differences between the House and the Senate rules. This committee has done a pretty good job on keeping the rules consistent. There are a few areas where they differ, primarily where the House uses batch amendments or batch approval of amendments. And that's not really a problem or an issue. So I'd like to get to House proposed amendments of Senate and House Rules 342. It's the first rule appearing after that memo on House and Senate rule differences. And this, here we go.
No.
Nope.
I went too far. But let me see.
No, keep on going.
It'd be behind that stapled together packet.
Proposed amendments to Senate and House Rules 342. What this does is it addresses the grammatical issue that some speakers and presiding officers of the Senate have had when you say the bill passed and title is agreed to. And the easy way to describe that is a preposition is a poor word in the sentence with.
Title is agreed.
Well, another way to do that is get rid of that, because there's no need to refer to passage of the title or agreeing to the title on it. So that's what the rules amendment does. Once the bill passes, it'd be House Bill 1076 passes, and then whether or not the emergency clause carries. And the emergency clause carries or the emergency clause fails. That's all that's needed to be said by the presiding officer.
I agree with that. You know, you have to get the proper grammar.
And that's difficult.
To which title has been agreed?
It just causes confusion.
Oh, I've noticed that, yep.
So now you just say
the bill is passed.
House Bill 1041 is passed.
That's all you need to say.
Okay.
That's that one.
Do we need to do these individually, or do
what we
just
could do is voice votes on these individually, and then at the last meeting of this committee, when you move to adopt the report, we'll take a roll call vote on all the rules amendments. Unless there's some controversy, then you probably should take a roll call vote. But the first few rules that I've laid in order here probably shouldn't be controversial.
I don't think so. Is
Do you need a motion to approve and a voice vote?
Yeah.
Is there a motion to approve? Yes.
Well, I think we can bring it up after the motion, too.
Go ahead before we take it.
Mr. Chairman, are we proposing to change the rule here, or are we just making a recommendation to the various rules committee? Because I think just on principle, we shouldn't be changing any of these.
Mr. Chairman, I probably should explain this to the members. The Legislative Procedure and Arrangements Committee reviews legislative rules, makes its recommendations, and its recommendations for rules changes are presented to the rules committees for their consideration. So these aren't adopting rules changes, which will go directly to the floor. They'll be presented to the rules committees on it.
That makes sense. We have a motion to move this forward as a recommendation. Moved by Representative Vigasau. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Seconded by Senator Wardner. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the next rules amendment is the rule dealing with the recording of proceedings. This was presented to the committee at its last meeting when the committee approved the installation of video and recording. Basically, what it is this is a requirement by statute that the legislative rules address storing recording sessions on the electronic media. This rule does that. It requires audio and it may include video. This committee approved audio and video for the floor sessions, and what this rule does is it says it has to be audio, it may include video, legislative council will provide access on the website on it, and retain in accordance with records retention policy, with records having historical value, those are always retained. There's no expiration date on historical value records. In fact, our records are used by other state agencies because they throw too much stuff away.
And tell me what we're saving today. Has all the audio been saved today without the cameras and any new cameras? What are we saving today?
Nothing.
So nothing today. So now we're saying that we're going to save audio for sure and maybe video.
Yes. And because this committee approved video installation, we will be saving video too. I mean, because it's together.
Remember, we had that long discussion at one of our other meetings about whether somebody's going to pull a chunk off and use it in the campaign ad and be whacking the other guy around because of it? Well, that possibility still exists, but the point is, we got to remember who we're working for here. You know, and if we're afraid of saying it on the floor, we probably shouldn't have said it. If we're worried about coming back and haunting us, probably shouldn't have said it in the first place. But so I'm in favor of this. I think it's a good idea. You know, we're in a modern age where people want to be connected, and they're not going to come out here and watch us, but they might want to see what we did. So I'm in favor of this. Senator Christman?
Just in reference to the previous discussion, though, I think, you know, that was one point that was discussed, whether people use bits and pieces to clip someone. I think the more important point that everyone who's in a leadership role in the legislature in the future needs to keep emphasizing to their members is that it's not used in a more offensive manner where we end up being similar to a lot of people in the federal government that just stand for hours and pontificate on every subject in order to create video clips that we can use in future campaigns. And that'll be a shameful thing if that happens, that our sessions start dragging on for hours and hours and hours.
Well, we do that already the minute a camera shows up from the radio TV station. Then all of a sudden everybody's got their speak light on.
That's just the House, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, I'm sure it's the Senate, too. They're on the TV more than we are, I think. Is there any other objections to this? We've kind of worked this over pretty well before. If not, I'll take a motion to approve or to pass this along. We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Hold along.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the next one is proposed amendments of Senate and House Rules 346. This is in response to a question during the 2011 session as to which session should be determinative in the transmitting a bill or resolution upon adjournment. So if you look at probably the easy, I'm going to say it's the easiest to see it, it's in subsection two, it's in the same place in both rules. It's on the 39th, on the 38th or after the 39th legislative, on the 38th and 39th legislative days and after the 59th legislative day, the, see, the Secretary of the Senate or Chief Clerk of the House shall transmit the bill or resolution to the other chamber immediately upon adjournment of that day's session. That's what's caused the issue. What session? So the change is upon adjournment of the last session on that day. This deals with when you're coming, going in and out of sessions, in and out of sessions, what session do we send the bill over to? And, you know, it's, the assumption has been on the last session. This makes it clear that it's after adjournment of the last session on that day. So you don't send the bill over at 2:30 when you're going to be coming back in at 3 or 4 or 5.
That makes sense to make that clarification. I would have assumed it was the last session anyway.
Yeah, but this is just the question was asked. Which session? It's that day's session.
Any discussion?
Mm-hmm.
Have a motion by Representative Kelsey, there's a second.
Second by Representative Vigasaw. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're moving along so far.
Oh, I was a little, I picked the easy one.
I know that.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the next one is proposed amendments to Senate and House Rules 601. A lot is included in here, but it's, the question is, it's in response to a question as to when to act on measures placed on the calendar under House Rule 601-3G. So if you look at 601-3G, immediately or as the floor action proceeds through 11th or 14 orders. There's two issues on the House rule.
Does the Senate have the same rule?
Yes, okay. That's, but it's not as, the Senate is treated a little bit differently, and I'll explain it. The question arises, do the language may be acted upon immediately after placement on the calendar? The proposed amendment provides for action on the measure immediately after placement on the calendar unless a member objects. So if you look at that 3G on it, it's the last sentence in subdivision G, if you're in the Senate rule. It's the next to the last sentence if you're in the House rule. It's without objection, a measure placed on the calendar under this subdivision must be acted on immediately after placement on the calendar. So this is when you're, after the 32nd day or the 55th, after the 32nd day with respect to your chamber bills, after the 55th legislative day with respect to any measure, they must be placed on the calendar after for second reading immediately after action is taken on the amendment. And the question is, well, when do we act on it then? We put it on the calendar. The rule says you may act on it right away. And the presiding officer says, well, when is that? When should we do it? This rule says you do it right away unless someone objects. You've just adopted the amendment, you put it on the calendar, you vote on the bill right away unless someone objects. Okay.
That has come up before where we argue whether or not it has to go right to the top of the calendar or not.
Or does it go to the bottom of the calendar? Because what you're doing is you're skipping a day. You're getting it onto the calendar for 11th or 14th order right away.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the Senate, and that's the same as the House. But the Senate also, the House also batches amendments. So if you look at the House rule, which is on page 4, there's another sentence that's been added. If more than one amendment was deemed approved under subdivision A, and that's where the House adopts all amendments in one motion, or they deem them approved because there's no objection. You're batching amendments in the House. If more than one amendment was deemed approved under subdivision A and the measures are placed on the calendar under this subdivision, that means automatic placement on the calendar, the Speaker shall announce whether the measures will be acted on immediately after placement on the calendar and the order in which the measures will be acted on.
They don't do it that way in the Senate.
The Senate doesn't batch.
They go to action.
Yeah, the Senate, the House will approve 8 amendments at one time.
And he must say what's going to happen to that. The Speaker must list the order at that point in time of how they'll be acted upon.
Right. In fact, in the House, you don't need a motion to approve the amendments on sixth order.
Yep.
Without objection, the Speaker deems the amendments approved, and then it moves over. So the House is trying to speed up its action on it. And this takes care of that situation where you're going to be voting on it right away unless someone objects. If you batch them, send it over, then the Speaker will announce whether they're going to do it right away and what order you're going to be taking them up.
don't have any trouble with that, until we know where they're going to be at. Any questions, comments, thoughts on that? It clarifies what should be done. In most cases, if the leader wanted them voted on or whatever, he'd move it right up to immediate action anyway. I'm assuming that's how you would have done it in the Senate. He'd have moved the amendment right up to the top of the calendar anyhow.
Yes.
But now it says that he's going to do that. Okay.
We have a motion to move this forward.
So moved.
We have a motion by Senator Wardner. Second.
Second.
Second by Senator Schneider. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The next item is proposed amendment of Joint Rules 501, and it's really just 501. It says and 502, but there's no change being proposed in that one. It's just including it because these are the two rules dealing with fiscal notes. If you look at the change, what this does, it reflects procedural changes resulting from technological enhancements of the Legislative Council's fiscal notes system, which allow fiscal notes to be viewed electronically. The procedural change that does not appear in the rules relates to timing of fiscal note requests. The change here is in subsection 4. If you look at subsection 4 in Rule 501, the agency or department preparing the fiscal note for a bill or resolution as introduced should complete and return the fiscal note to the Legislative Council within 5 days. There's basically no change there other than they don't need to send us a bunch of copies, because these are all being transmitted electronically to legislators in the front desk and wherever. The change is the agency or department preparing a fiscal note for an amended bill or resolution shall complete and return the fiscal note to the Legislative Council not later than 1 day from the date of the request. What's been done in the past is that once this amendment gets approved on the floor, the fiscal note request is sent. Well, you just approved amendments where when you approve amendments, they go onto the calendar and are voted on 14th order. It's really difficult to get a fiscal note back in 5 seconds. I mean, it's, you know, I'm being somewhat facetious there, but we're moving the process along. 1 day is a difficult time, but what the process is going to change is the request for the fiscal note is going to be made once the bill is reported out of committee rather than when it's after it's approved on the House floor or the Senate floor. So hopefully we'll gain an extra day there with some encouragement to the agencies to get the fiscal note information back so you have it.
So what happens in the Senate, and again, I'm not familiar how you function, but you amend on the floor and it has a fiscal effect. How in the world do you get a fiscal note when you're amending on the floor?
I don't believe you do.
You don't? You just go ahead and vote on it without the, you know, the fiscal note?
Yeah, we do.
Because you could make amendments that would change the fiscal outcome of the bill. Really? Oh.
Mr. Chairman, in defense of the Senate...
Well, I'm not picking on him. I'm just saying, that's the biggest hang-up we have, is people saying, you know, where's the fiscal note that's attached to this amendment? And if we don't have it, or if we don't have it in a timely manner, we got to table that amendment.
I would think that the floor amendments really are amendments that have been discussed in committee that weren't adopted, so there may be fiscal information on those amendments, especially if they're appropriation.
Okay, I was just wondering how it works.
I'm not sure on that.
You have the opportunity to amend or we don't. Ours is done committee work-wise.
I guess I don't ever remember that coming up where we had an amendment that had a fiscal note that, or money involved that we didn't know.
Senator Chris.
Mr. Chairman, and sometimes they're just obvious changes. You know, if we're going to add another dollar a day to our compensation, we can kind of figure that out. And so it's close enough, or we lay it over for a day or two until we get the fiscal note. On this change, though, when we make that requirement of the agencies, what happens if we're meeting, as we sometimes do, near crossover and the end of the session, over the weekend or something, and they're not here? Does that put them in some kind of a real bad jam, because they're certainly not going to have staff in all these agencies over the weekends and that sort of thing?
Are you looking at, don't look at me to answer that one.
They're not going to get any sympathy out of me on that one.
Mr. Chairman, you know, that is one of the situations, but you know, oftentimes if those committees are meeting, taking action, the agencies are there as well, so they're going to know that amendments come out. You know, they need to manage their workload, and if they don't get the fiscal note, your options are either just to take the bill up without the fiscal note or wait, you know, sometime in that next day of the week or whatever.
So, Mr. Chairman, the big thing here is that as soon as that bill is kicked out of committee, go for the fiscal note and don't wait around.
Yes.
That makes sense. Any other questions on that one? Do we need to make, approve this to move on as well?
Should, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Is there a motion to move this forward?
Yeah, I'll.
Senator Warner moved, is there a second?
Second.
We have a second by Representative Vigasau. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Move it forward.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Are we guaranteeing that the public can be aware of what the bill has done after the amendments are on there if we immediately, you know, pass the amendment and then pass the bill? It doesn't give anybody much time to say, you know, that this changes that. They maybe have had time before that, I understand, but sometimes they don't realize it, and then when they see the bill with the amendments on, hey, this doesn't work the way we thought it would. But if it's already passed, it's kind of out of their purview to be able to let members know, members of the House or the Senate know that this bill is no longer what we thought it was. Is that a problem or not?
I think you'll have the right information before you vote, but Jay, you can add any of that.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, this doesn't really affect whether the committee has the right information on it. Presumably, they've been discussing amendments, and before they report the bill out with amendments, they have an idea of what the fiscal impact would be. Maybe not. Depends on the committee chairman on it. But this doesn't change that. It's just that the request for the fiscal note is coming. It's still before the amendment has been adopted. It's once it's reported out of committee, hopefully giving an extra day or two to get that fiscal note back to the Legislative Assembly.
I think it might be, it'll sure speed up the process if it works. As long as the agencies are cooperating. Plus, we all know what death by fiscal note means, so.
Mr. Chairman, sometimes the process would work a lot better if it was a lot slower.
Well, yes, I'm not going there today.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the next one is Senate House Rules 304. This was in response to, we're starting to get into the list that you gave me. Okay. There's a list, rules, questions, or inquiries that arose during the 2011 legislative session. And here's, although Mason's rules state that another member should be addressed as the gentleman from the 5th District in the House where the practice of addressing another member by stating Representative Smith or Representative Jones, it would seem to allow our present practice if done respectfully as our members do it. And I give the quote from Mason's, to guard against the appearance of personalities, that has long been the rule in legislative bodies that no member shall refer to another member by name and debate. The other member should be described by district, by seat, or as the member who last spoke, or by describing the member in some other manner. Mr. Chairman, I would, you know the floor actions and discussions better. I think the Senate is more formal than the House is, and guards the personalities and debate issue very seriously. I don't remember too many times when the senator has referred to another senator by name in the Senate. In the House, it's difficult to refer to the member from District 13 because you have two of them. And I'm not going to go there as to using adjectives to describe either one of the members other than the House districts.
Then the question comes up, do you need to change the rules, or you just need to have the speaker and the pro tem have the proper rules of decorum on the floor that people understand how they're supposed to address it? I've never understood this good senator from such and such deal, but, I mean, never having been there, the good senator from District 13 or whatever, and especially when I didn't get the sensation that the guy meant it.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think we're that stuffy. I mean, we like each other.
Yeah.
We don't get.
I was kind of pulling your chain a little bit. I just did. But what's your personal opinion, Jay? Does anything need to be done? I mean, I'm not aware of a lot of problems there.
I hate to make an editorial comment, Mr. Chairman, but I covered the rules that I thought were important to cover.
They're already covered, you're saying?
Yeah.
And the rest of them are not?
Well, they could be important, but they might just generate debate. The reason I say that is, I didn't think the Senate was going to go along with this.
Well, I don't have any trouble with the way we're handling it. I just think you need to set the proper table out front that use proper decorum on the floor. That's my opinion. And if there's a problem, I think it's the Speaker's responsibility in our chamber to straighten that out.
So, Mr. Chairman, you're saying that then in the Senate we would do this also?
But if you adopt, Mr. Chairman, Senator Wardner, if you adopt Senate Rule 304 Amendment, yeah. Or, you know, that's your recommendation that you'd be referring to, you know, Senator Christman.
I think we need to do what we've been doing. We like that. It works. I don't, you know.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I would sure hope that we pull the reins on this one.
I'm not against that.
Okay. Next rule, Mr. Chairman, is Senate House Rules 312, and that's motions during debate. This is in response to rules, questions, or inquiries that arose during the 2011 legislative session, and that was Rule 312 of the House Rules. Maybe the motions under this rule should only be made by the leaders or assistant leaders. And that is those motions. Fix the time to which to adjourn, to permit a member to vote, to lay on the table, to move the previous question, to close, limit, or extend debate, to move, to postpone to a day certain, to refer, and to amend. And the change is that only the majority or minority leader, assistant leader, may make those motions.
Now, Mr. Chairman, Jay, to lay on the table, in the past, any member could do it because it happened. I mean...
Yeah.
Or this would change that so that only the...
Majority and minority leader or the assistant majority and minority leader can make that motion.
Senator Snyder, any comment?
Just maybe wondering the purpose of the proposed amendment. I don't know if there's a specific situation where it's ever been a problem. I don't.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Christman.
We've had no problems. If there's one that needs to be fixed.
Senator Olson would agree with you on that, but... Yeah, again, are we chasing our tail here? Probably we are.
And Mr. Chairman,
because the decorum has always been, and most of the time those are going to come from leadership anyway, mm-hmm. those major motions like that. And I think it's up to us as caucus leaders to make sure that our people understand what's happening on the floor and the significance of these motions when they're made. So I'd have no trouble moving, not doing anything with this.
Yeah, we're okay with that. We think.
But again, if nothing else, it reminds us, though, that it's our responsibility to make sure that these things are understood by our caucuses, how they probably should be handled on the floor. They do keep some amount of order to the process by doing it that way.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Are these motions followed by a vote, and then is it a majority of the vote, or is there two-thirds or anything?
You know, I can't tell you that on all of these, but they would be all have to be voted on, I believe.
Yes.
Okay.
So we can let that one go. Unless somebody really wants to push it forward, we'll just go on with that.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the next one is House Proposed Amendments to Senate House Rules 318 and 324. 318 is included just to give you an idea of the different vote requirements for different procedures in the Senate and in the House. The changes in Section 2 with respect to the Senate, or Section 4 with respect to the House, it's Senate Rule 324. Again, these are basically the same rules. No standing rule or order of the Senate may be reconsidered or suspended except by motion made by the majority or minority leader or assistant majority or minority leader and carried by a majority of the vote of the members present. The comment is, again, this comes from the rules, questions, or inquiries that arose during the 2011 session. The vote required to suspend a rule. Now it is a majority of those present and voting. Should this be a higher percentage, for example, 60% or two-thirds? Consider any increase carefully, as this could be a two-edged sword. Maybe consider a rule that only leaders or assistant leaders can move to suspend the rules. So understand, when I prepare a rules amendment, when there's an option, I just pick an option and prepare it. As this wasn't necessarily the idea, it was just, this is the idea, maybe 60%, or maybe it said, maybe have just the leaders do it. And I just want to describe what's happened here. Before the 2001 legislative session, House and Senate Rule 324 required a two-thirds vote of the members elect to consider, to reconsider or suspend a rule. The rules were amended beginning with the 2001 session in recognition of the fact that the rules could be adopted by a majority vote, and thus, the way to avoid the suspension was to amend the rule rather than suspend the rule. Because if you amended the rule, it was a majority vote, if you suspended the rule, it was two-thirds vote. Those senators are just tricky back in 2001. Mason's Section 285 provides for suspension by majority vote. The section does note that in many legislative bodies, it is provided by rule that the standing rules may be suspended by a two-thirds vote. And the way this was handled, rather than going back and forth, it just used the leaders to either suspend or amend the rule. You're smiling, Senator Christman, you know where this came from. I mean, not this came from, but the reason the amendments were made, or that the rules are amended temporarily, which is kind of like a suspension, so to speak.
It's kind of like being able to pass a budget by a simple majority, but requiring a tax increase to have a 60%, but we can override the tax increase with a simple majority. I mean, it really doesn't make much sense, but anybody with a pressing interest to move this forward? Okay, we'll just let her go.
Next one, Mr. Chairman, is Senate and House Rules 403. The question is whether the Delayed Bills Committee prepares a report, and what happens if the Senate or the House rejects the report and allows the introduction of a bill. And technically, the rule, the Delayed Bills Committee does not make a report, so there's no acceptance of the report. Okay? So, and just looking at the rules, the Delayed Bills Committee shall receive from the Secretary every bill or resolution offered for introduction after the time for introduction on the same or next legislative day after receiving the measure, shall inform the Senate whether the introduction of the measure has been approved on it. Before 1995, the rule said, and shall report to the Senate or House. And that's where this issue first came up. Well, what happens if we say it's approved and they reject the report, so they're not introducing the bill? Or vice versa. So the rule was changed so that they just inform the Senate. So the report of the Delayed Bills Committee is, the Delayed Bills Committee has met and has improved for introduction Senate Bill XXXX, and then the bill's introduced. Now, if the Senate or the House disagree on it, the chamber can overrule that by taking a vote, but normally there's no report on it. The chamber can also always decide to introduce a bill.
So what is this doing, requiring a report?
Nothing. This is addresses the issue, and I thought I'd just bring it to your attention that there's no report for Delayed Bills Committee. Okay? The Delayed Bills Committee says it does not approve introduction of the bill is introduced.
Yeah, that's the way we do it now.
The Delayed Bills Committee says approves introduction of the bill is introduced. There's no acceptance of that report.
Yep.
Okay, it's just automatic.
So this rule, this...
This is just informational purposes, to just remind everybody there's no report from the Delayed Bills Committee.
Okay, I'm trying to think of where the difference was here, but it's just informational.
Yep.
Okay.
Next one is Joint Rule 206, and that is in response to a rules question or inquiry that arose during the 2011 session. If a committee amends a resolution, it goes on sixth order. If the committee vote is unanimous, should the resolution go to 10th order, consent calendar, or 11th order after the sixth? Senate and House Rule 601 do not direct placement of reports on the consent calendar, other than the amended measure must then be placed on the calendar for the next legislative day. The applicable order of business could include the 10th order, the consent calendar, the 11th order, second reading in the House of Origin, or the 14th order, second reading in the second House. To address this issue, the proposed amendment places uncontested, that's unanimous, resolutions on the consent calendar regardless of whether that was a recommendation of the standing committee, similar to how the legislative management study resolutions are to be placed on the consent calendar. An uncontested resolution includes a resolution receiving a due pass or a do pass as amended recommendation. Basically, what we're saying is an uncontested resolution can go on the consent calendar. And it's one that receives either a do pass or do pass as amended resolution.
I know that question came up a lot of times where we would be, was unanimous do pass, and everybody's wondering why we were voting on it as well, even though I have no trouble with voting on these things. What's your thought, Mr. Beringer?
Consent calendars really cause some issues sometimes because you have to be careful in the consent calendar for do not pass and the consent calendar for do pass. I mean, because you can't put both of them on. Yeah. The same, this, you know, that was the first
issue. But this would allow either way?
Yeah.
Well, that'd be a...
That's just this brings up uncontested. And uncontested means it's up in subsection 2, it's defined. It's a unanimous vote of all the members in the committee.
Either way, up
either
or
way.
Down?
Yeah, either way, up or down.
Well, I don't know that we need to do anything different. Yeah.
Right now, that's only done with legislative management study directives resolutions.
Any thoughts? I don't see any problem with the way we're doing it.
How would it affect the Senate? Because we handle everything. We don't put anything on the consent calendar. It'd be the House, and they'd be the only one that this would affect, right?
Well, it's a joint rule, but the Senate doesn't really follow it then. Do you vote separately on every legislative management study resolution?
Well, Mr. Chairman, what we've been doing is not putting anything on the consent calendar. If we passed this, these kinds of things would go on there, and if we wanted to continue our current practice, we'd always have to take them off and put them on the 11th or 14th.
But you should be putting legislative management study resolutions on the consent calendar under the rule right now.
Shame on you guys.
Okay.
Well.
But, I mean.
There is something in Masons about tradition.
I don't see
this
any
just, this will just allow it. I mean.
I don't see any problem your practices. With doing it the way we're doing it and voting on the ones that are up there. And
I don't see.
Unless somebody wants to move this forward, I would let it go.
The Joint Rule 301 is dealing with conference committees. It's in response to a question as to whether rejection of a conference committee report should result in discharge of the conference committee and appointment of a new conference committee. The rule is silent as to the effect of rejection of a conference committee report on continuation of the conference committees. Masons provides, when conference committees are unable to agree, that fact should be reported to the houses. The committee should then be discharged and a new conference may be appointed in the same manner as the original committee. Also, when for any reason either house refuses to adopt the report, the committee should be discharged and a new committee of conference or free conference appointed. So the change is the new subsection 8. If the house having possession of the bill rejects the conference committee report but desires continued conference, that house will discharge its conference committee, appoint a new conference committee, and notify the other house of its action.
Well, I personally don't have any trouble with that because usually you're at such a stalemate that you're not going to get anything done. But
I don't have a problem with it either. You might appoint the same committee, but you'd at least review it. I don't.
But if you discharge them, it doesn't say you couldn't reappoint the same people.
Right? That's correct.
I don't know if you accomplish anything at that point in time, but...
Be aware that the obstinate members of the conference might not be in the House, from the House of Origin. So you're discharging your members. I mean, you can reappoint them again.
Yeah.
But the problem might be the members from the other House. And this rule says the House that has possession of the bill discharges its committee on it. Oh. I mean, it clarifies.
It doesn't say both sides have to discharge, just the side that has control of the bill?
Yeah.
Well, that would be a whole different story then. Because now you just get half of the equation fixed.
I mean, I'm not trying to kill the bill, but I'm just pointing that out.
Well, I don't know if you gain anything there. Because I, quite honestly, if it was at that, I'd be, the leader should get involved in the, and there'd be new members appointed if it was at a stalemate anyway.
If the committee's report's rejected, do you reappoint a committee or just keep the committee and tell them to go back? What do you do?
We have to review it every time, you know, and when that happens, the leaders have to review it to decide even now whether you're going to continue that way or not. So I think we're fine the way we are.
Okay.
I don't have trouble with leaving it the way it is.
We're actually doing this, but...
Yeah, this would put it in a rule.
We only have, I can only think of a couple times each session where we've had to change committee members on these conference committees where they got to such a stalemate we had to move people around.
Okay. Okay, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and then I assume, or I'm going to make the assumption that with the recommendation that you've made with respect to the employment positions, that we'll prepare, you've approved a rules amendment adding the recording clerk as a Group B employee, employed by the majority party, and I'll prepare the amendment.
That was my understanding as we did it.
Okay. So I'll include that to change. And what'll happen is we'll put these together in a packet, and then it'll be, you know, a roll call vote will be taken at the next meeting, and then the House rules and will be presented to the House Rules Committee. The Senate rules will be presented to the Senate Rules Committee during the organizational session, just the way it has been in the past, that these are the recommendations of the Legislative Procedure Arrangements Committee.
You had another one on here. Oh, no, the fiscal notes one.
I moved that around.
Oh, okay.
Make sure that was in the group of no further consideration.
So the next time we have a meeting, Mr. Smith, is when?
Mr. Chairman, just for the committee's information, Legislative Management, for those that are members of Legislative Management, will meet October 4th, which is a Thursday. The purpose of that meeting would be to review the fiscal notes on the initiated measures and to subsequently submit the report to the Secretary of State for public information purposes.
Does this committee need to meet anymore prior to the session?
Mr. Chairman, I think we're planning on the day before the Legislative Management fall meeting, so it would be November 12th, which is a Monday, probably in the afternoon, I think is what you're looking at, Jay.
Yeah.
So for you, everybody's calendars.
So we're going to, Legislative Management is going to meet on
October 4th. And procedures and arrangements, which is this one, will meet November 12th.
Yeah, the afternoon before the Legislative Management. The full Legislative Management meets on the 13th and 14th to receive reports from committees.
Yep.
Just to wrap up its work here.
So we will meet with this committee like November 12th.
Right. Yes. Yep. Okay. Probably in the afternoon.
I would say we could start a 1 o'clock meeting and get all of our business done.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
This is a Legislative Management issue, but it was brought up. At one of our earlier Legislative Management meetings, we had a request to have a full accounting of the costs of the Fighting Sioux bill and all that, and it was passed, and we haven't heard anything. Is that being prepared, or?
I couldn't answer that question unless council can come up with that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kelch, I know we've had some discussions and contact with UND and the Attorney General's Office, Secretary of State, some of those. We haven't compiled that yet. I think when we last asked about the information, all the bills hadn't been received and that kind of thing, but we'll follow up with that and get it to the committee members.
Yeah, what would we do?
Because we usually wait until we get the recommendation of employee positions. In case we don't meet again.
There's one more thing. We were just discussing here. Being we kind of went through all of our business today, including the employees, we may not need to meet on the 12th. So we may be able to have a motion to have our report prepared that would be given during the Legislative Council reports.
Yes.
Without having another meeting on the 12th. But that would require us to vote on all the things we dealt with.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I would require is a motion authorizing the chairman to prepare a report for the committee, the chairman of legislative council staff to prepare a report of this committee and present it to legislative management and to avoid.
Otherwise, that would be our business, wouldn't it? On the 12th, we'd come back and have that vote on what we've already done.
Yeah, I've kind of moved a lot of stuff into today. I didn't think we'd get through with all the rules.
Any objection to doing it that way, to make that motion and then have that report prepared? Otherwise, we're going to come back and the only thing we're going to vote on is that particular issue.
Well, there may be other things that I.
But if they come up, we'll call a meeting, but if not, there's no reason to have one.
I'm good with it.
So moved.
All right, we have a motion by Senator Christman. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Representative Vigasau.
That's to authorize the chairman and the staff to prepare a report. Recommend all the amendments by, it'll be a roll call vote, so we can cover the amendments, even though those are just recommended amendments to the employment committees. It's, you know, it's a substantive type recommendation of this committee.
And if anything else comes up, we'll let you know in plenty of advance about if we need another meeting, but otherwise, we'll be just coming in to vote on what we've already completed. Representative Kelch?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Didn't we agree that we took voice votes on all those rules changes, we would have to have a roll call vote at the end?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
That's included within this motion.
That is included in this, okay.
That would be with this motion, and then those are recommendations.
Right, I understand that.
To the respective rules committees.
Okay.
We're ready for a vote?
Representatives Carlson?
Yes.
Drumdahl, Caldor, Kelch, Vigasau?
Yes.
Senators Wardner?
Aye.
Christman?
Aye.
Pilser?
Aye.
Schneider?
Aye.
Taylor?
Aye.
Motion carries, Mr. Chairman.
Anything else for the good of the order? If not, we got a meeting upstairs. Kevin, you busy this morning here. We're adjourned.
The 4th, October 4th, we can't be here, but we're down to what? Pre-initiated measures?
Yep, and that, all we're going to do is approve whatever fiscal note would be attached to them. The agencies bring that in, so.
Vouchers!
Secretary of the Senate, please sit.
I don't have a voucher, but I will be.
Representative Carlson? Representative Delta gave this to you.
We can turn this in upstairs, too.
Yeah.
Yes, if you'd like to, since you're in both meetings, do your one voucher, that's fine. If you want to do it all in one, that's fine. Since you're in two meetings, go ahead.
You got stuff for me to sign?
I actually gave it to Jim.
Okay, well, he'll find me upstairs.
I will go look.
Ralph, I did mail it, I think. Yeah, I think I mailed it. I'll get those from upstairs in a little bit, if you're wrong.
Yep.
Yeah, I'll hobble my way around.
All I know is on the computer, if I go A, B, and R, and then it comes up.
I gotta find the application.
You can go to your office, maybe, you want to do that, you can listen.
I was there yesterday, and.
I'll check in, then I'll go to Mike.
Okay.
All right.
Stop over there, as long as I don't have to hurry to get up there, I'll be all right.
I think I might recognize you in this role.
I appreciate that, man. Get copies for you upstairs. I'll throw it down. It's $82, because at 18%, it's $82, but then it shows on there, it'll say, I pay $82, I use 50% of it, I request reimbursement of $41.
Okay, so they need to put in the percentage of what they want reimbursed.
Really, what Jay's onus is, you're putting it all back on them, and they have to justify.
I want that handout.
Electronically, or?
I don't care. No, I'm not going to attach electronically to him. I'll attach all these memos and others electronically.
You have a copy. They gave you even another one yesterday, I sent you an email, because they sent one out, and we added the actual line cost to it.
Or word that, give it to me.
Or cut in different locations someplace, or? I have no idea.
Only for handing them out, we never did.
Can I have one?
No, in case I needed to hand one out.
I
case it got too murky, to try to keep it at a high level.
Okay, well, that's what I was, okay.
And here's Kilzer's.
Okay.
And here's empty one side, doesn't matter, I guess.
I can take this back up.
I think I said it took off without giving it.
I think, isn't he in budget too?
I think I said it doesn't need one, but he's in budget section, right? For the, right, tracking.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, you can have all this.
Okay, thank you. Just wanted to make sure that one, Doug, or I guess Martinson turned into Salzburg.
This is actually one.
Right, but I just was, because I know if you change it.
Okay, how do we, let's see. Yeah, where's the directions? Click the stop button. I'm clicking the stop button now.